From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. Progress, far from consisting in change, depends on retentiveness. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to fulfill it. Those are the words of George Santayana, the Spanish-born American philosopher who died in 1952. How should we best interpret Santayana's admonition about progress in history? And what's the importance of Santayana's thought today? Some answers and insights this week on Soundings from one scholar who recently completed a fellowship at the National Humanities Center. Henry Levinson is a professor of religion at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. During his fellowship year at the center, Henry Levinson worked on a forthcoming book entitled George Santayana's Religious Naturalism. According to Henry Levinson, Santayana viewed American culture as suffering from spiritual diseases, among them the love of money and a misplaced faith in science and technology. But Santayana's social criticism did not stem from Christian orthodoxy. Instead, Santayana asserted a tradition of human excellence and of aesthetic spirituality, a sense of beauty traceable to earlier American religious thinkers such as Jonathan Edwards and Ralph Waldo Emerson. Henry Levinson, you're a scholar at the Humanities Center from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. You're writing a book about George Santayana, who is, a philosopher, a theologian, a poet? He's many things. Who is this man? Why is he important?
Well, as you suggest, it's kind of hard to pin him down. Mm-hmm. He was a professional philosopher at Harvard University, where he taught for over 20 years. But at the same time, he wrote and published a great deal of poetry, and also some plays. And eventually he wrote a variety of essays and even a best-selling novel.
How did he think of himself?
Santayana thought of himself as a philosopher.
Uh-huh. A professional philosopher.
Yes.
All right. Very analytical, for example.
That's right. Uh-huh. There were philosophers working both in and outside the academy.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, Santayana became disaffected with much of what was going on in the academy and felt that the only way he could really accomplish what he was trying to do as a philosopher was to quit.
Uh-huh.
And he did quit Harvard University finally in about his 50th year and spent another 50 years living in Europe where he continued to write at an unbelievably productive pace.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Henry Levinson, we're talking about your forthcoming book on George Santayana, who was an American, Spanish-born, a philosopher. Let's tease out some of the important threads in his philosophy. Where would you begin with a question like that?
Well, I'd begin by characterizing him as a religious naturalist.
Hmm.
The thing that made him a naturalist, Wayne, was that he had rejected the idea that there were any supernatural powers at work in the world.
Okay, so we have a division here, which is to say what? Rationalism, on the one hand, dealing with the apprehendable facts and emotions and feelings of life, as opposed to dealing principally with the supernatural.
Yes, in one sense anyhow.
Uh-huh.
It would be difficult to characterize Santayana as a strict rationalist, but he didn't think we had any sufficient observations or patterns of thinking that would lead us to believe that there were any divine powers at work in the world.
Did he, for the purposes of his philosophy or in his poetry, in his essays or novels, did he define God? Is that the sort of, or is that utterly naive to ask a question like that of a philosopher like Santayana?
Santayana had a conception of God, and he thought that the conception of God was a very important idea.
Uh-huh.
But God was not a power, God was an ideal.
Uh-huh.
God was that sort of being towards which we attempted to live as human beings, and the kind of life that we attempted to realize.
All right, and what was the relationship between creator and creation? What did Santayana think about that? And here I'm asking you about humankind as well as natural phenomena, the world, all the things around us.
Santayana didn't think that science or anybody else or any other sort of investigator had come up with any adequate idea about what created the whole thing. If he had had an option, he would have chosen some physical explanation for creation.
Did he believe, for example, in things like chance, luck, what Herman Melville calls the warp and woof of human circumstances, just the fact that we move amidst elements that we have no control over, and really we're at once the victims and the beneficiaries of that.
Indeed. A good way to put it, I think, is to say that Santayana not only saw the universe out there as pretty much constituted by chance, but he also saw human beings as chances. As chances to make things better than they were.
Elaborate that for me. You mean in the sense of, here, for example, we might be talking about what, volition and free agency, things like that?
Well, Santayana was convinced that human beings had it within their power to understand why their lives were significant. They could understand and even feel what made life worth living.
And what was that? Is it possible to generalize?
Yes, in a way it is. As Santayana pictured things, we had certain feelings, certain instincts, certain impulses that left a sense of value in our lives. And he called these feelings and instincts and impulses the sense of beauty. In other words, we found certain things lovely and lovable and loving, and all of those lovely, lovable, and lovely loving things supported our lives and gave them the significance that they had.
How did Santayana distinguish when he talked about what he called the sense of beauty? Did he figure out or posit a difference between what was inside our heads, what we create, and what we bring to our experiences in the world, in contrast to what the world itself is?
Well, this is one of his most interesting views. Santayana thought that the sense of beauty that we had preceded any break between what is inside us and what is outside us. In other words, to take an example, we not only were delighted by a sunset, but a sunset was delightful. We not only loved another human being, but found another human being lovely.
So there's intrinsic worth on both sides of this exchange that's going on.
That's, as he understands it, that's correct.
Henry Levinson, we're talking about your work on George Santayana, the Spanish-born American philosopher. How did Santayana think we should live? I take it here that we're now discussing social conventions in set against what we really are down deep, things like that, right?
Yes. Well, in a way, Santayana comes straight out of the Protestant traditions that he sometimes criticizes. The Protestant tradition in America has focused for a long time on two aspects of life. The life of conscience, or moral life, which is sometimes referred to as the life of duty, and graceful life, or spiritual life, which it lies outside the bounds of duty, lies outside the bounds of conscience. And Santayana thought that the most important aspects of culture to deal with when it came to issues about life significance were these two aspects of duty on the one hand and grace on the other.
Are we talking, for example, about a disparity between the practical and the aesthetic?
In a way we are, although that's not the way it had always been pictured by Protestants. What Santayana did, and what's now old hat for some people, was to identify graceful life with the sense of beauty. Whereas philosophers and religious thinkers before Santayana had tended to identify graceful life with some supernatural being at work in the world.
He didn't believe, for example, to be very specific, in the divinity of Jesus Christ, or did he?
He believed that Jesus Christ was a figure that appeared in a story that was probably the most important story that the West had to tell about itself, its possibilities, and its problems.
And to him, it didn't necessarily matter that this was only a story.
Not at all. It made it more important, not less. In other words, he distrusted Protestant literalism. That is to say, he was very much interested in showing how important it was to embellish life imaginatively, and how the embellishment of life through the imagination is one of the things that rendered it significant. And the quest for the literal, the quest for the really real, desiccated the imagination. So he was very distrustful of Protestant literalism and iconoclasm, that is, the tendency to pull down symbols
and
pictures.
It goes without saying then, Henry Levinson, that Santayana would not have taken to what many of the fundamentalist trends that, well, they're certainly not new. They've been with us for a long time, but that are much in evidence today.
Santayana would say that America is unfortunately getting what it deserves. It's getting Protestantism at the end of its tether.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me put a couple of questions on the table here for you. Henry Levinson, you're from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. You're at the Humanities Center writing a book about George Santayana. Tell me about something that Santayana wrote. Be very specific for me. And describe its, what, accessibility, its importance to a general audience.
Well, I suppose the most accessible piece of work that he wrote was his novel, The Last Puritan.
Mm-hmm. And this appeared roughly when?
This appeared in 1936 in this country, a year earlier in England.
Uh-huh.
And in that work, Santayana pursues this theme of Protestantism at the end of its tether.
Uh-huh. Who is the Last Puritan, by the by?
Well, the Last Puritan is a fictional character.
Uh-huh.
He's a student of Santayana's at Harvard.
Uh-huh.
And Santayana appears in the book as one of the fictional characters.
Hmm.
And in that work, Oliver Alden, the Last Puritan, revolts against Puritanism, as Santayana puts it, on Puritan grounds. That is to say, he comes to believe that the conventions of Puritan life do not permit him to live the graceful sort of life that his tradition mm-hmm. has always celebrated and that he craves.
All right, now you're telling me that Santayana is criticizing things like what we call the Protestant work ethic, certain conventional, if not rigid, notions of morality, the relationship between God, humankind, and money.
That's right.
We got some biggies on the table.
That's
here.
Right. But Oliver is in a bind,
in
a classical double bind, because Oliver has issued himself a command.
Uh-huh.
He has said to himself, Oliver, be spontaneous.
All right.
Now, when you issue the command, be spontaneous, that is, love for love's sake,
right.
Feel the beauty of life for beauty's sake,
mm-hmm.
you no longer, you cannot simultaneously issue yourself that command and do it, because mm-hmm. if you respond to the command, you're not being spontaneous. Mm-hmm. And if you don't respond to the command, you're not being spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, you lose.
Well, don't keep us in suspense. What happens to Oliver?
Oliver loses.
He does. In what way?
He dies without ever having gotten out of this box established by this double bind, this be spontaneous double bind.
All right, so this is why, what, Santayana's Protestant and philosophical critics would say that he was a pessimist?
That's right. He was a pessimist, but he was a pessimist about Protestantism's fortunes. On the other hand, I read Santayana, and several other people do too, as anything but a pessimist.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I read him as a proponent of what I call comic faith.
All right, tell me about this.
Well, I'm relying here to some extent on the work of some other scholars, like Robert Paul Hemus at Stanford, who have shown that a number of people at this time, in literature, in novels, and in essays, began to develop a picture of things in which people were able to lead memorably delightful lives without any reference or any attempt to achieve utterly blissful life in a heavenly world.
Uh-huh.
In other words, Santayana wanted to show people that the quest for another world outside this world, mm-hmm. that is to say, a quest for heaven and a quest for utter bliss, was impossible and bound to fail, but we could lead lovely and delightful lives in any case. We could take joy as seriously as meanness.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You're listening to a discussion about the American philosopher and religious thinker George Santayana, who lived from 1863 till 1952. My guest is Henry Levinson of the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. During a recent fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Henry Levinson worked on a forthcoming book entitled George Santayana's Religious Naturalism. According to Henry Levinson, Santayana's philosophy of religion presents modern readers with a series of paradoxes. For example, Santayana viewed God not as power, but as ideal, a force for beauty and grace in the present world rather than a hope for the next. Underscoring Santayana's views of humankind and the natural world was a belief in what Henry Levinson terms celebrations of human excellence. For Santayana, both the critical and the festive dimensions of religion were equally important, leading to a sense of beauty that undercut human pretensions. At the same time, they contributed to a tradition of aesthetic spirituality. So what you're telling me, Henry Levinson, is that one and the same time we could call this man a creature of faith, and yet Santayana might also be called an atheist because of his, disregard, if not disrespect, for the other world.
Well, Bertrand Russell once said that Santayana had said that there is no God and Mary is his mother. Now, I think that's an apocryphal tale.
Uh-huh.
But the upshot of it is this, that Santayana disbelieved in any divine power at work in the world.
Uh-huh.
On the other hand, I think it's important to remind people that we can have a conception of God that is not a power.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have a conception of God that is not a power, as Santayana had, that is a God who is an ideal but not a power, then from that angle, Santayana is not an atheist.
All right. Well, this cuts in two directions, Henry Levinson. You make me think of the quotation of the words of Jesus in the New Testament, that the kingdom of God is within you. If we take that in the most literal of terms, I think that might be consistent with what you're telling me about Santayana. And yet at the same time, you're telling me that we can sort of ignore that, that the emphasis is the here and the now. And we're not talking about hedonism, and we're not talking about moral promiscuity. We're simply talking about leading the best life possible under the current circumstances.
I think both of those things hold for Santayana.
So he's a paradox, like much of religion.
He's a paradox, but he's not Quine would call a falsitical paradox. In other words, he presents some apparent contradictions, but I think they are only apparent contradictions.
Henry Levinson, we're talking about George Santayana, the Spanish-born American philosopher. What, at theoretical and practical levels, what uses did Santayana make of religion in America? Catholicism, Judaism, Protestantism, and you might take one of those by way of an answer.
Santayana lived in that kind of culture that some people have referred to as the Protestant Club.
Hmm.
Interestingly enough, as a child, he was raised as a Catholic.
Huh.
The story is complicated even from the beginning, however, because his father was a deist. That is, his father believed that there was a God who had created the world, but that we were able to read God's message in the world and needed no scripture, no revelation.
The divine clockmaker.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And his mother had strong Unitarian tendencies. So that when they sent him to church as a child, they were doing so in a sort of cultural way, as a cultural gesture. They thought that the ritual and the symbolism and the rich moral and holiday life of Catholicism
mm-hmm.
was an important part of being a Santayana.
Uh-huh.
But they had little theological investment in all of that. Now, when Santayana began to be criticized in America, the first thing that people pointed to was the fact that he was a Catholic, so he couldn't understand.
I see.
And Santayana himself picked up on this criticism and said, yes, I am a Catholic, but he was using a mask. In other words, he was putting on the mask of Catholicism in order to develop an aura of distance. I can see you better because I'm farther away and I have some sense for your limitations. Mm-hmm. I stand outside your culture. When in fact, Santayana's thinking descends almost immediately from the sort of Emersonian Protestantism
mm-hmm.
That saturated the culture in which he was raised.
Mm-hmm. And just incidentally, this notion of the mask would certainly have some connection to Santayana's expression as an artist, his ability to create some layers between
That's right.
himself and his topics.
That's right. Interestingly enough, Protestants have always been suspicious about masks. They want people to take their masks off and be themselves, whereas Santayana thought of masks as playful. Put them on and you can pretend that you're something else. You can actually identify with something else as a result of putting on a mask.
And this is part of what you have called his, what? Did you use the term comic faith?
Yes. If we can identify with others and learn to love them as they are by putting on masks that let us do this, all well and good. He wrote an extremely influential book called The Life of Reason. It was actually five books long. And it became the Bible for a while for religious naturalists in this country, many of whom were working as philosophers or as graduate students at Columbia University in New York. And in this book, he characterized religion as constituted by three things: by piety, spirituality, and charity. And he described piety, spirituality, and charity in ways that he hoped people could accept in a world without any supernatural powers at work in it.
And what might that entail in human behavior?
Well,
what kinds of surrenders, what kinds of compromises, what kinds of acts of faith?
Let me tell you about each one of these things. Piety, on Santayana's view, was loyalty to the conditions on which your life depended. In other words, your life depends on parents, on American culture, on the natural environments in which you live, on the cosmos at large, insofar as all of those things support your being. You couldn't be without those things.
Again, we're back to Melville, lowering one's attainable notions of felicity.
Exactly.
Kind of compromising and saying these are the ground rules, huh?
Yes, and this was a way for people to discipline themselves, to realize that they were not kingpins. And that humanity was not a kingpin. Humanity was nothing outside the context of these conditions. So that was the importance of piety.
All right, and we have two more left. What are they?
Spirituality and charity. If piety was loyalty towards the sources of one's being, spirituality was loyalty towards the goal of one's being. That is to say, a spiritual life was a life led with an image or an ideal or a picture of what things should be like, even if they never became that way. So that if I lived a spiritual life, say, by constantly criticizing my life in terms of its lacks, in terms of the way in which it didn't realize well-being or heavenly existence or whatever, I'd be moving forward towards the realization of an ideal, and that's what spiritual life was all about.
We're back to some paradoxes, aren't we? The tensions between ends and means. The third element here?
The third element is charity. And Santayana thought this was one of the most, if not the most significant element in a religious life.
Did he mean that in the sense that caritas, what is that to you religious professors, the love of God?
Well, in a way, it was the love of God, at least it wasn't the love of self. It was defined by Santayana in opposition to the love of self. To be a charitable person was to realize the relativity of one's own desires, aims, and goals. In other words, it was to realize that simply because my being was very much supported by my country, America, I shouldn't assume that America is the be-all and end-all of all political life.
I see.
It meant that simply because I loved my parents and wouldn't be without them, that I shouldn't limit my love to them, but I should appreciate what was other and different in my life. And simply because I had certain spiritual values and a certain spiritual direction, I shouldn't assume that my spiritual direction was the only one. I should turn the other cheek. I should accept and appreciate other spiritual directions as coming from other beings who are worthy of love.
Henry Levinson, you're a scholar from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. You're at the Humanities Center writing about Religious Naturalism, and George Santayana. Certainly there have been other books written about Santayana. What is it that's peculiar or special or even unique about what you are attempting to bring to an investigation of this man?
Well, a number of things. First of all, most people have characterized Santayana as a stranger in a strange land when it comes to understanding American culture. My work is an effort to recast Santayana in a way that highlights the indebtedness that the debts he had to such predecessors as Jonathan Edwards, Ralph Waldo Emerson, mm-hmm. William James, mm-hmm. so that my effort is to place him within a tradition, and the tradition I'm placing him within is one I'd call the tradition of aesthetic spirituality, mm-hmm. the kind of religious thinking which tends to identify graceful life with the life of fitness, harmony, beauty, proportion, mm-hmm. and the like.
Henry Levinson, let's conclude our conversation about George Santayana. You're a scholar from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. I want to be really personal. A moment ago, by a slip of the tongue, I said you religious professors. I meant religion professors. Mm-hmm. Is it possible for you to tell me about the effect that this man has had on your own life? Is that important to you at all?
Oh, sure, it's important. Santayana is influential for me in the sense that he serves as a precedent for the kind of work that I do in the classroom. Mm-hmm. I mean that when I'm in the classroom teaching about religions, my effort, so far as my students go, is to get them to appreciate what is other and different in their lives and to take themselves with a grain of salt. That's one way for them to begin to achieve a sort of critical leverage, mm-hmm. On their own limitations by imagining sorts of lives and sorts of being that differ from their own. And this is what I think the great possibility is in something like religious studies, but also most of the liberal arts, if not all of them. And in that sense, the liberal arts are spiritual. Mm. In that sense, the liberal arts are functioning in a way that open people up to ways of being that let them get leverage on themselves, mm-hmm. let them take themselves with a grain of salt, and at the same time appreciate others.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to a conversation about the American philosopher and religious thinker George Santayana, who died in 1952. My guest was Henry Levinson, a professor at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. During a recent fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Henry Levinson worked on a forthcoming book entitled George Santayana's Religious Naturalism. For a cassette copy of Soundings on George Santayana, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week on Soundings, conversations about two other aspects of religion in the modern world. The topics will be Anglo-Catholicism in the 19th century in Britain and Mormonism in 19th century America. The Soundings panelists will include scholars from Indiana University, Purdue University at Indianapolis, and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Listen to Soundings. This is Kim Nielsen at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join Wayne Pond this week for a conversation about the American philosopher of religion, George Santayana. Santayana viewed God not as a power, but as ideal, a force for beauty and grace in the present world. He also asserted a tradition of human excellence, a sense of beauty traceable to figures such as Ralph Waldo Emerson. The Religious Naturalism of George Santayana. Some answers and insights this week on Soundings from the National Humanities Center on this station.